are represented through storytelling, film, dance, theater, and music. HurleyvilleArtsCenter.org. And from listeners like you.
Good afternoon, good evening, welcome to the local edition, local news and information to keep you connected here on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And coming up, I'll be talking to Marcia Fink from the Hudson Valley Alzheimer's Association because the Walk to End Alzheimer's is coming up. That's in the second half of the program. First up, it is Monday, and here on the local edition, we start the week by checking in with Sullivan County to find out the latest. Today we're going to be talking about State Route 17. It's nearly 400 miles long in New York State, one of the longest state routes in New York. Goes through Sullivan County. It's the main artery within the county, the main transportation connection to the outside world. And for years, Route 17 has been threatening to go into a cocoon and reemerge as a beautiful Interstate 86. But it hasn't happened yet. However, in June, New York State Department of Transportation held a public workshop to update folks on the Route 17 project and receive input. They're going to be doing another one in September. On the phone with us now to talk about this upcoming workshop in September, it's Fred Eisenberg, Planning, Community Development, and Real Property Commissioner for Sullivan County. Fred, thank you for joining us. Welcome back to the program.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jason. So, I love your analogy of the road as a cocoon waiting to emerge as Interstate I-86.
Yeah. I think it'll happen one day. I that's what we've been told. So I've been watching for it. So is this part of that ongoing story?
Yes. Actually, one of the things that the project is focusing on is looking at the existing exits along the highway and whether they meet federal standards or not. And the ones that that don't, there are options for improving them. And they're also making some recommendations to remove some of the exits that they don't believe can or should be brought up to standard. So that's something that people might want to get on their radar if they're living in the vicinity and use those exits.
I hit the wrong thing. I feel like I was just in the last 2 weeks, I was looking at a list of the proposed changes. It was probably at the county website, must have been where I saw this. And I remember thinking, oh, they're going to get rid of exits, you know, where, and then I looked at the exits that they're proposing getting rid of. And I had to be honest, I didn't even know where they were, let alone why I might take them. Of course, that's just me. We all move in our own little, circuits around the county. Have you heard back from people, or do you know people that feel strongly one way or the other about any of these proposed changes?
You know, I don't. There have been a couple of public workshops online, webinars, interactive sessions on the project. And the last one, the proposals for changes to the intersections were presented. And people seemed, reasonably happy with them. I think there were a couple of people who asked, well, the ones that you're proposing to remove, why can't you just leave them, if you're not going to improve them? And I think that's a response that DOT will have to, come up with in their next session, something, they're preparing a response for. But other than that, people were, reasonably happy with what they saw.
Okay. And do you know what else they're looking for input on, and how many more of these info sessions might there be?
There's one more. I think there are three designed into the process, one to sort of kick it off, one to look at the options, and one to look at a response and sort of wrap things up. And that third one is scheduled for September 14th. I don't have details on the time, but, we'll promote it closer to the event when we do get those details.
Has there been a traffic study in conjunction with this process? What's the most recent information we might have on traffic? Because, I don't know, it seems like things keep changing out there.
Yes, and actually, at the last session, that was the sort of the bulk of the comments focused on what the state was using for their traffic numbers. They did not go out and take new traffic counts for this particular study. They were looking at existing counts, and they chose a what they thought was a peak traffic event at a Friday evening in May of 2018. And during the last, public workshop, people were saying, well, 2018, things have changed a lot since then. And, looking at a Friday in May for Sullivan County, that's not necessarily going to be as peak as we get, in the height of the season. So those were comments that were made. Also, the Partnership for Economic Development and the Planning Division took a look at some of the proposed developments and growth factors that went into the study to make sure that they were accounting for everything that we knew was coming online, and we responded by giving them an additional list of projects that they hadn't factored in. So hopefully the next iteration of this will see a bit of change and see if those increases have impacted any of the conclusions.
Is the State Department of Transportation the primary determinant of what actually happens with this project, or at the point where, like as you said, you have to be in the changes have to be in compliance with federal regulations. So is there similarly federal oversight or funding needed for this? And I guess that's just my way of saying what else might make this still take long?
Yeah, absolutely. Federal standards and federal funding is certainly going to be part of it. And the final phase of this really is preparing the environmental review at the federal level. It's something called NEPA. It's called the National Environmental Protection Act, I think, conformity with that. And that's the direction where all of this is headed. It is, however, a state project, it's a state highway, at this point, and they're driving the study, and they're going to be doing the implementation.
Of course, environmental concerns. This highway goes right through some beautiful country, especially you get up, well, really all through Sullivan County, but all of the accessible waterways up towards the northern parts of the county, the Beaverkill rivers and things like that. Highways constantly crossing over these streams and rivers. And I know more and more this past year in other road projects, I've been hearing from local environmentalists who are saying, maybe we don't need to expand these roads. Maybe we don't need to develop them. Have you been hearing anything like that? Did you hear anything like that in the first workshop?
Well, first of all, you should be aware that this study isn't for the entire highway. It's basically from, it's downstate in the Harriman area up to exit 103 in Sullivan County. And, they have a graphic, which, you've probably seen showing the traffic count and up to 103. Traffic reduces by about 3/4. And I think, they're figuring after that, it's going to be further reduced. So they're really looking at the higher traffic sections of the highway downstate.
And I forget, I always go by names more than numbers, which is terrible, but like where is 103?
Sure. So 103, I think, is Rapp Road by Center for Discovery. It's right. The exit that's just one past what I think of as really the gateway to the western part of the county, exit 104, where, if people are traveling to Bethel Woods or any of the, river towns, they'll get off at 104, start at the raceway and head west on 17B. Exit 103 is just, one further than that.
It's true. I'm an oddball. Like with my friends, we'll get into minor arguments over this because that's the raceway exit. I've never remembered the number. There's raceway, there's Monticello, there's Kaimisha. That's eastbound, going that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know the numbers. I just know the names. Anyway, so Rapp Road, and that's there. Like you said, Center for Discovery is near the hospital.
Right, and on both sides of the road, actually.
So is it then that that's the section where there is more traffic, so more needs to be done from there down to the southeast?
Yes. And, you know, in the study, they've done their forecast, and as I said, you know, hopefully they'll update them a bit to include some of the additional information for Sullivan. But in the preliminary run, you know, they have a couple of graphs showing what they think will change over time, and traffic changes are referred to in terms of level of service, and you know, traffic engineers give out grades from, you know, A to F, F in the red, and you know, over time and the increase that's projected, you see a lot of that failing grade going down in the south. Sullivan, maybe some things will shift from a B to a C or a C to a D, but nothing really dire.
Right. Okay. And so, where should folks be looking? How can they get involved? Where will they be asked to give feedback in September?
Sure. Well, even before September, people can go online and take a look at the existing study information and proposals and concepts for changes for the intersections. And, you know, I'm not going to give long, you know, website addresses,
right,
but if people Google New York State DOT Route 17 study, it's also called the PEL, Planning Environmental and Land Use, that stands for, but PEL, study, PEL 17, that'll show up at the top of the Google list. Once you get into the New York State DOT's website, though, it's a little bit more tricky to find the information. You have to look at what they call the resources tab. But if you click on resources, then you'll see all of the information and the slideshows and past presentations and concept drawings. All of it's there online. So just Google New York Route 17 PEL study.
Right, and I'm at the county website right now, sullivanny.us, and there's a link right there in the county news saying share your ideas for improving Route 17, which was posted a couple
that.
Weeks
yeah,
ago, too. And I guess as, you know, new feedback rounds open up, people might see a link there again. That's sullivanny.us. Freda, anything else under your auspices in the realm of planning and development? Anything going on that you'd like folks to know about before we go?
Oh, gosh, you always ask that, and I always seem to be caught up short. Right now, we're in the middle, or we're actually coming up to the end of New York State's annual grant season. The county is putting in an application to get funding for the parkland that it's acquiring out in Calicoon on the Upper Delaware River. That's a really exciting project. And if people are interested in supporting that project and helping us get some of that grant money, they should reach out to the planning department, and, you know, we would love letters of support.
Okay, great. And, don't worry about being caught off guard. It's like anytime anybody asks you, you know, any good jokes, like you do, but you're not going to remember when they ask you, you know. So next time we'll get it.
But the Calicoon Park, you know, it is a really beautiful piece of property, and it's a very exciting project.
Cool. Well, I think we'll have you back on again to talk about that. And anything else that we need to let folks know about, especially as they come to full fruition. Freda Eisenberg, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And again, this is Freda Eisenberg, is a planning, community development, and real property commissioner for Sullivan County. This is the Local Edition, local news and information keeping you connected here on Radio Catskill. Coming up, we're going to check in with Alzheimer's Association for Hudson Valley. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. On air at 90.5 FM. Streaming online at wjffradio.org. Listen to us on your smartphone. Just download the WJFF app. And on your smart speaker, just ask your smart speaker to play WJFF Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. Radio Catskill's Summer Fun Drive hasn't started yet, but it's starting soon, very soon. In fact, we're kicking it off Thursday night on John Gordon's Ramble Tamble. Now, you can call us then to help us get started with a bang, or you can actually donate early and help us meet our goal even faster. Go to WJFFradio.org, give early, give often, help make this fun drive as short as possible. WJFFradio.org.
This week on The Bioneers.
Today we're going to try to simply ask one simple question that many of you ask yourself several times a week. Does my dog really love me, or does she just want a treat?
Do animals think and feel? And how can we know for sure? Ecologist and author Carl Safina says the answer may not be as difficult to determine as we think. On Bioneers Radio.
Monday night at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Is Radio Catskill. Listen to us on your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker to play WJFF Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and according to the Alzheimer's Association, more than 6 million Americans of all ages, have Alzheimer's, and an estimated slightly more than that, 6.2 million Americans age 65 and older are living with Alzheimer's and dementia in 2021. And Alzheimer's Association has a Hudson Valley chapter that includes Sullivan County. And October 9th, they're walking to end Alzheimer's and to stop these statistics from rising. On the phone with us now is Marcia Fink, a volunteer with the Hudson Valley chapter, who's gearing up for the walk in October. Hello, Marcia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
So before we get to the walk and other details, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you volunteer with the Alzheimer's Association?
Yes, my mother had Alzheimer's, and she was having memory problems in the early 90s. And around 93, which is like 27 years ago, she was really failing. My father was her caregiver. She had the disease for like 8 or 10 years before I told him that he needs to get more help. The Alzheimer's Association was there to help, but not as much as they do today. And what we had to do was get her into a nursing home. They do have different programs for daycare, and it was just taking a toll on the caregiver. So I've been involved like over 25 years with the Alzheimer's Association, whether it was donating to friends. My friend Sheila Lashinsky has been a big advocate for Alzheimer's Association, and she invited me to a walk many years ago. So then I got involved, and I've been doing the walk. I've been jumping in the Lake in February for the Sub-Zero Heroes to benefit the Alzheimer's Association, and I participated in the walk for all these years as well. Last year we had the pandemic, so you could do your own walk anywhere, and you had your choice of the day and the venue, so that was really wonderful as well. This year, the Alzheimer's Walk to End Alzheimer's is in Montgomery and changed venues this year, and it's at the Benedict Farm. Registration is at 8:30, and the walk is at 10 o'clock. If you're not comfortable doing the walk at the park, you can do it virtually as well. We have registration right now. We also have sponsors. If anyone wants to sponsor, they can. You try to get that in early. We have a couple months before the day. It's great to get a team. My mother, her name is Clarice. She passed in 09, and I've been walking in honor of her, in memory of her. And I'm Team Clarice's crew. So you can be a team captain, you can be an individual, you can walk with people, you can go wherever you want to.
And what do you see as the reason to walk instead of just donating money? Which, I mean, I'm sure that's still nice, people donate money, but why should people walk?
People should walk to get out the awareness. It's a really great group of people. They're all connected. Whether you have someone that you love that has the disease or if somebody passed, if you only, so many people nowadays know somebody that has Alzheimer's or they have a friend that has Alzheimer's. Years past, it was not that well known and understood, but it's a really wonderful opportunity to meet other people and talk with them with what's going on with them and their loved ones, if they're a caregiver, and what kind of opportunities. The Alzheimer's Association representatives will be there and be there to help you if you need help for someone that is getting the beginning stages.
And does the Alzheimer's Association, I mean, so that sounds like you're helping people, you know, get the care they need if they're facing this illness. But it seems like with this, a lot of time, what you also need is the people who are in the position of being caregivers and sometimes becoming caregivers when they weren't expecting to, they need some help too.
Oh, definitely. The caregivers have most of the difficulty, even though the person that has the disease, it's really sad, but there's a lot of stress involved in being a caregiver, and the amount of people that are caregiving today, the numbers are just like quadrupling and becoming out of the ordinary, where people have to stop working and care for their people. The cost of care is so expensive, and but yeah, we're trying to find the cure, and we hope that someday there will be a world without Alzheimer's. And with the donations to help with research and local programs, really is needed, because if we can kick this, we'll be saving money in years to come, because then we don't have to have caregivers and we don't have to have people that have the disease that need assistance in nursing homes and hospitals and hospitals, care, nursing homes, or if they can stay home, which is really nice, the 24-hour care is exorbitant.
Right, yeah. Not.
But it's a wonderful event. It's a really a wonderful opportunity to meet people, and there is information at the walk. And like we said, it's October 9th. It'll be here before we know it. We put in for a beautiful sunny day. We put that in order beforehand. So it's rain or shine, but we're looking forward to having a wonderful day. So Yeah. If it's not, if it's raining, we just have umbrellas, but there's a lot of people available there. Also, if anybody wants to be an advocate, I'm an ambassador for the congressional district here for with Delgado. I've been down to Washington, D.C. to request different bills to be passed and to support Alzheimer's issues, and he's been so supportive over the years.
Well, let's so talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about that for a moment. If can you
for different requests for help in getting the cure for researched.
If you've been advocating with people for people with the
so registering for the walk is very easy. You just go to alz.org. And it's, do you want to register for a walk? And you just click on it and put your zip code, and it's pretty easy to go through. But if you have any questions, I'm available. My number here is 845-866-2800. If you want to call Alzheimer's directly, it's 800-272-3900.
Okay.
And they can help you get to a local representative.
All right. Well, Marcia, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this, and maybe we'll check in with you again before October to remind folks one more time about it. But thank you for the work that you've done, and good luck with everything that you are doing.
Thank you, Jason. I would love to speak to you again.
All right. Thank you. And again, we've been talking about the walk to end Alzheimer's, and that was Marcia Fink, Hudson Valley Alzheimer's Association volunteer. Again, this walk is happening October 9th at Benedict Farm Park. And there's information online to register at orangesullivanwalk.org. That's orangesullivanwalk.org. All right, that's going to do it for the local edition. I want to thank you so much for listening. Remember, if you missed any of this episode, make sure you never miss any episode of the local edition. Sign up to get the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. It's a local edition from Radio Catskill. And it'll come to you. But we do love it anytime you can join us here live, 6:30 Monday through Friday. We do it every day. It's the local edition. I'll be back again tomorrow to do it again. Thank you to Patricio Rubio for producing the program. And thank you to our guests. And thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me for a special edition of the Kingfisher Project with author Maya Solovitz about her new book, Undoing Drugs.
We are spending enormous amounts of money to create these prescription monitoring programs to detect who's using extra opioids and then cut off their medical supply. And geez, the overdose rate keeps going up. Like, why would that happen? I can't understand it.
It's the untold story of harm reduction. Next time on the Kingfisher Project, Tuesday, August 3rd, only on the local edition.
I'm your host, Kusar Grace KG, right here in the place to be. The Music Emporium, Tuesday, 7 to 9 on 90.5 FM. Community supported radio, serving the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania, and Upper Delaware Valley. All those other towns, villages, and hamlets who pick up our broadcast, big shout out to you.
Food ties us to land, language, and culture. From an Indigenous chef opening a new restaurant during the pandemic to the ways Canada's food guide is connected to colonization. This week on Unreserved, how Indigenous people are using food to strengthen community. That's with me, Phelan Johnson.
And that's coming up tonight at 9 here on Radio Catskill. Also coming up tonight, cool and clear conditions, overnight low down in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, slight chance of some thunderstorms in the evening, in the afternoon to evening. It'll be sunny otherwise, some clouds in the afternoon, maybe a stray shower, thunderstorm, high of 82. Chance of stray isolated thunderstorms increases as we head into the evening, heading towards an overnight low of 58 tomorrow night. Okay, coming up, we've got our great lineup of Monday night programs, so you want to stay tuned for that. We're going to get started with La Voz en Breve coming up in just a moment, right here on Radio Catskill.